Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and sitting right beside me, back in the gondola, from the Washington Post, Ben Gover. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. There's no joy in the gondola tonight, I gotta say, man. We've done podcasts. I've done them from, like, funeral parlors, hospital rooms, lots of different places. But that was one of the most gutting events, period, that I've seen happen, unfold before my eyes. I feel awful for Kevin Durant. I thought Bob Myers' post-game speech about it hit a lot of the right notes, but it still left me feeling a little bit off and weird. Mm-hmm. The entire building reacted initially in very strange fashion, as some of the Warriors were quick to point out. I thought the Raptors pulled things together and had a very nice, classy, and dignified response to things. But, I mean, this was a basketball tragedy. We're talking about a top 10 or top 15 all-time player with a career-altering injury after sacrificing basically his own health to rush back onto the court after facing significant criticism over the last week or so. It's just a bummer, man. And it was a great game. I'm sure we're going to get to the game in a second. But to me, it was just gutting.
We could get to the game, but I don't even want to talk about the game. We're going to have to talk about it. It's an NBA podcast, sure. And I think that people watching at home probably felt the same way. But watching it in the stadium, I didn't even really enjoy the game that much.
No, it was horrible. It was excruciating. I mean, we make things like root canal Reggie and stuff like that. I mean, that was, like, deeply painful on a spiritual level. For anyone who loves basketball, it doesn't matter what team you're on, what fan base you cheer for, you never want to see it go like that.
Yeah, and I think there's a rush to assign blame in the wake of all this. And
do you feel like blame needs to be assigned, or are you— I'm a little bit in shock.
A little bit in shock. That would be the first place to start.
Is okay, disclaimer.
Well, yeah, disclaimer. And Steve Kerr even came out in his press conference and said, you know, talking to the guys, I didn't know what to say, because I think that's the only proper reaction right now, because what we just saw, A, we don't know enough about what was going on behind the scenes and what kind of pressure there was or wasn't to have Kevin Durant play. The one thing I would say is that Kevin Durant is an adult and he is represented by adults. He probably has a set of doctors that he met with separately.
And keep it real, he's dancing around before the game. He's swishing jumpers during warm-ups. He wanted to be out there.
Exactly.
And I've said that consistently for the last couple of months. Like, there's no question ever did I think he was in a situation where he was playing games with that. He didn't want to be back on the court. If we know anything about him, he's a basketball addict. Now, you can have all sorts of questions about how did they message this thing.
That would be my point. If he were seriously injured or more seriously injured than the Warriors ever let on, I wish they had messaged that better and made that clearer and talked in detail about the extent of the injury.
They couldn't have done it worse, right? I mean, it was basically as bad as it can get. And I don't know if they were playing the game of, like, let's just shroud it in secrecy and maybe we're going to, like, throw off the Raptors and make them overthink things.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about, like, shooting yourself in the foot, right? Because clearly Durant, you know, he's hearing all this stuff. He always hears it. You know, there's all these questions that the teammates are apparently starting to get frustrated. All those reports come out after game four. Steve Kerr is giving us one story after game three, changes his story after game four. It was just an out-and-out mess from a franchise that usually does PR very, very well.
Well, but, yeah, and to be clear, what we're saying is that if you message it more clearly in terms of his timetable and the pain he's dealing with,
the severity,
and the risks, I think that would have eliminated a lot of room for people to pressure him and question his toughness and speculate about whether he's sitting out and why, and that just didn't happen. And instead, we did have that sort of world of speculation where, like, I don't blame people for asking questions, because I think even people on the Warriors were asking questions. I think even Warriors players were reading reports about when he was supposed to come back and then seeing that he didn't come back, and then that kind of made things more complicated behind the scenes. And we don't know how much that played into Durant coming back. But one thing I would say, though, is I think it strips him of some agency to act as if he was just bullied into coming back on the court. This was a huge spot, and Kevin Durant is a competitor, and I think that's one of the main reasons he wanted to be out there.
He certainly knew the risk. There's no question about it. That's why I'm not necessarily interested in rushing to the blame game. this is one of those like teachable moments for all the, you know, the basketball coaches and wannabe basketball coaches and parents and kids that are out there. And this is like real trauma, like I'm saying. And look how various people responded, right? You have Steph Curry rushing to his teammate's aid, accompanying him to the locker room. You've got Andre Iguodala offering his shoulder to Kevin Durant. You've got Bob Myers, you know, finally after a month of silence, coming out and just being like, you know what, I'm going to lay it all on the table. Like, this was gutting. Go ahead and blame me. I accept responsibility. If you need to blame somebody, put it on my shoulders. That's a lot of good character. Also, Kyle Lowry, you know, the other guys on the Raptors team,
really
getting the crowd to sort of understand the gravity of the moment, to take a step back.
That's the thing. I think that people were killing Raptors fans to some degree, and I think the most plausible explanation is that most of the people cheering Kevin Durant going down didn't necessarily understand exactly what was happening.
Right, and the ball was going the other way too, right? So you have this moment where you're like breaking free in the open court and it's like, all right, we're going to score. And so your excitement is up, and then now he's down on the ground. What does this mean? And yeah. I do think there was a little hint of bloodthirstiness, but again,
you know what? Yeah, let's not beat around the bush, actually, because okay. I think there were people on the Toronto side who I saw say like, oh, like they were just confused. They were cheering because it was a turnover. They were very clearly cheering because Durant was hurt for about the first 30 seconds, and then they realized what a horrible look that was and saw their players kind of lead them in the opposite direction, which was pretty encouraging. I mean, whether it was Serge Ibaka or even Nick Nurse, I think, reached out to Durant as he was walking off, and like, that part was really cool, but
right.
We don't
and look,
need to
I mean,
let them completely off the
no,
hook.
No, I understand that, but I am actually, like, I'm not going to let them off the hook, but I'm more understanding, though, of the Raptors situation. I mean, the fans are all amped up. This is a moment they've been waiting for years, if not decades. Some of these people are sleeping outdoors before the game. Like, any little advantage, your mind is immediately going to think to your own self-interest, which is why I think we should focus on the bigger picture positive takeaways here, which is great sportsmanship from Toronto, great collective team identity. I mean, how often have people tried to put a wedge between Steph and KD, right? And I think there's some real distance between those two guys, right? But when things really hit the fan, Steph was there for him, and I promise you, a guy like Kevin is not going to forget that. After the game, he wrote on Instagram, "I'm hurting deep in the soul right now. I can't lie, but seeing my brothers get this win was like taking a shot of tequila. I got new life." If that's not like the most raw, honest thing we've heard Kevin say in the last 3 years, I don't know what would be.
Yeah, and I think it was really cool. Clay was very emotional in his press conference as well, and basically sort of paying his respects to Durant and what he's meant over the last couple years. I think it's true that a lot of things have been complicated behind the scenes, but when it mattered, those guys are riding together. And I don't know, I don't know whether people can hear it in my voice. It's just, this sucks.
No,
like,
we
can
horrible.
Talk about who to blame, no, like, Raptors fans, this and that, but like, the core issue is that we watched Kevin Durant. I don't know whether you experienced this, but seeing him out on the floor, I watched him warm up for 45 minutes before tip-off tonight, and just watching him move around, I was reminded how much I liked watching him play basketball. And
I never forgot that.
Well, no, I know, but I'm saying, like, seeing him back out there, you're like, God, he is just awesome. And then he starts off the game, plays really well for the first quarter and a half that he's out there, and it just, to then have that all kind of ripped away for 12 months. We don't know how serious the Achilles injury is, but it's a really serious injury.
Yeah, no, Achilles are usually serious, right? There's not a lot of minor Achilles injuries out there. I think kind of go along with what you're saying, though, when you're seeing him out there in the flesh, it's just a reminder that not only is he like a player who we haven't seen play for a month, but he's a human being, and he's not just a search engine topic or a narrative device or all these other things that he winds up becoming because he's that big of a superstar. And you're right to start to wonder, what does it look like going forward? I mean, if it's a 12-month injury, if it's a serious Achilles injury, I mean, he's a free agent coming up this summer. I don't think it would impact his earning power. Like, I think he'd still have, you know, the 4-year max offers from basically any of these teams that he's interested other than Golden State. But it does absolutely represent sort of a touch point for his career, right? An inflection point. Like, we're going to look at, you know, anytime guys have Achilles injuries, right? It's pre-Achilles and it's post-Achilles. And he's such a great shooter. He's so hard to defend. He's so long. He moves so well. He's a good ball handler. He has a lot of elements to his game that are going to help him, you know, overcome or keep playing at a high level after an Achilles injury. But he's not exempt from that changing and or altering the course of his career. And it's horrible to say that in the moment after it happened. But you know, that's there's a reason why Bob
sucks.
There's a reason why Bob Myers is in tears.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And it's funny because as different as you and I see the game sometimes, both you and I have been on the Durant bandwagon since day one. Literally, the first sports article I ever wrote was a college newspaper article about Kevin Durant while he was at Texas. Then when he went to the NBA, his first few years in the league, he would come back and play at Berry Farms in D.C. in the summer. I would go down there and watch him play. I was the only white guy in the crowd. At one point, the announcer called me out and was like, oh, we got Tom from MySpace in the house tonight. But, like, he's just the best. And for me, part of the frustration is that he's been in this fucked up situation for the last couple of years where he can't win for a variety of reasons. People have not properly appreciated his game. I've been part of that to a degree insofar as, like, I'm pointing out that this is not the ideal situation for his game to be appreciated. And so to come back tonight, this was an opportunity for him to just be appreciated on basketball terms. The Warriors clearly needed him, and he, you know, even that first quarter, it was like, oh my God, Kevin Durant is so good. He made a couple plays on defense.
No, he hits two threes. He blocks Pascal's shot. Steph Curry is getting like wide open lanes for layups to the basket, and you're like, man, like
yeah.
This is why everybody was saying, like I was saying 3 weeks ago, he's the best player in basketball.
This is why we've spent 10 years rooting for this dude. I mean, ultimately,
and if you look at his arc, right, it's that slow, gradual incline trying to pass LeBron, right? Like, wasn't this the moment?
Yeah,
and now.
Now, not only is it not the moment, you can't help but wonder what happens from here.
Right.
Lower leg injuries are dangerous for anyone, particularly someone his size. And
he's had the foot too. He's had 3 foot surgeries, you know.
Yeah.
So that compounds and complicates things as well. No,
it's bad. And this is the thing, like, a lot of times injuries happen and Twitter gets very dramatic and it's easy to kind of roll your eyes as everybody's saying, like, thoughts and prayers to the dude who just sprained his knee and is out 6 weeks. But, like, this is one of the greatest players of all time. He's had a really complicated journey recently. I was thrilled that he was going to be potentially starting a new chapter somewhere in July. And now all of that is thrown into uncertainty.
I mean, I was thrilled to see him back on the court because it confirmed a lot of the things that I had thought about him in terms of his passion for the game, the fact that he is a good teammate, a lot of these things that I've been trying to argue, you know, and sometimes, you know, falls on deaf ears because of just the complex situation that's been going on in Golden State there that you mentioned. And I think he validated a lot of those things. I mean, as corny as this will sound, you remember early in his career where he was trying to make the Servant his nickname?
Yes.
And everyone was like, bro, like, you're the Slim Reaper. Like, you're basically 7 foot tall.
One of the greatest nicknames of all time. No, call me the Servant.
Right. Like, but the Slim Reaper, you're 7 feet tall. All you do is hit clutch shots. You just bury teams. You, like, you know, take away their heart. It's a perfect nickname. He's like, no, I want to be called the Servant. But I'm sitting there thinking, watching, and this, seriously, this is the most corny thing in the world, but I'm sitting there thinking, man, this guy just basically gave the ultimate sacrifice, right? Didn't he go to his organization and
You're
say,
right,
look,
that is the most corny thing in the
I'm
world.
Gonna, oh, but he put his career.
He did.
I mean,
he
ultimately,
absolutely did.
And look, it didn't have to go this way. And if they had played out the computer simulation 100 times, how often does he have a series-ending career-altering injury? Maybe 1, maybe 5, right? Like, in most situations, it would have been okay. Maybe he scores 30 if he keeps playing like he did. Maybe he just finishes and gets tired in the second half. He only has 15 points. Like, there's so many different things that could have happened. And what he's wind up, you know, giving up, you know, where is he going to end up on the all-time scoring list now? Is he going to have the chance to compete for a championship again at this, you know, some point of his career? all these things that we sort of assumed about like the next 5 years of his life.
It's terrible.
Being a top five level player are all under question. Starting with, is he going to play next year?
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And when
so it was corny, but you're kind of with it, right?
I am with you. Right. Well, I'm with you in terms of his sacrifice. You know? Right.
So the servant, you can see where I'm going.
I can never get behind the servant nickname in any context.
We're calling him the servant from here on out.
Yeah, the servant.
It finally sticks.
Oh, God. I mean, when he was warming up, I put something on Instagram and I captioned it. Ooh wee, it's Velvet Hoop. Do you remember that commercial?
Oh yeah.
See, that's like the good old days with Durant before everything got complicated, and that's the guy that I was excited to see tonight. That's the guy I was excited to see in New York.
Let me ask you this. I mean, we're desperately searching for silver linings here. But does this injury wind up having like a Kobe Bryant injury late career effect where KD is no longer, you know, gun shy, hiding, not wanting to talk to the media, and he's just going to let it rip in front of the cameras for the rest of his career? Is that possible? Are we about to get – is this injury going to basically strip a lot of the drama away from Kevin and just turn him
it's
into a person –
strip a lot of the drama away,
right,
sure.
It just turns him into like the straightest shooter of all time. Is that possible?
Perhaps. I mean,
we would both welcome that, right?
Yeah. Well, and he's always been a straight shooter in certain contexts, but
when he's arguing with like 14-year-olds about who's better, Paul George or Kawhi Leonard or whatever. No, I mean, he's been a hoop head, right?
But yeah.
Like part
but
of the reason
talking
why
talking basketball, right. Kevin Durant will talk basketball with anyone and can go back and forth, talk shit, and he's a lot of fun with it. It's
right,
it's
but
when
how
he gets too concerned with how the world perceives him that right. Things get to go in a weird direction.
And for the last 3 years, that balance has been totally out of whack, right? Like
yeah.
The actual basketball talk has become such a small percentage of it, and the weirdness and the uncomfortable, you know, not wanting to open up to people, you know, kind of, you know, doing these boardroom things almost as like, you know, diversions to basically say, hey, I do have a presence out there.
Yeah, and at his core, Kevin Durant is a cool person. And that's not necessarily true for other people, other superstars even. But KD, like, one-on-one is a good dude, and so that's why this is so frustrating.
That's why I'm trying to find the silver lining.
Yep.
I mean, because is there another one?
I'm struggling.
Like, is there another one?
I'm struggling to grasp any silver linings right now.
I say we pivot to this end game, man, because whatever narrative that you wanted to write about this series, I feel like in the last 6 minutes it got written, and then unwritten, and then rewritten a little bit. You know what I mean?
I was literally
oh, you were doing that.
Rewriting for a magazine feature. I can't believe what just happened.
Okay, big picture. You've been predicting 3-1 series comeback for the Warriors since before the series started. You predicted it in front of hundreds of termites at Kevin O'Connor's cancer benefit.
Let's
which was incredible.
About that. Okay. First of all, what a cool event from Kevin O'Connor. It was very was a lot of fun on Sunday night.
Let's talk about the cool part. You going straight up to all the termites and saying, you know what? 3-1 comeback, I'm feeling it. It was amazing.
The coolest part is that Kevin O'Connor raised $10,000 cancer research.
You were the second coolest
part. The second coolest part was me. I'm not gonna give myself credit cool. But no, we sat there. We were the third panel, and we sat through the first two panels, and KOC at the end of each panel went around and asked these various basketball writers from around the media, what do you think happens in game five?
Right.
And we sat there and watched, I swear to God, 15 different basketball writers picked the Raptors to win in five.
Well, you can't really blame them.
What do you mean? The idea that, like, that this was just a sure thing tonight?
Well, each individual person can make his own opinion, and they can all reach the same collective conclusion.
My conclusion was that we were dealing with a bunch of homers on Sunday night who didn't have the audacity to go out on a limb and predict a 3-1 comeback. So,
anyway, get to the good part of the story.
I just had to mix it up. I did predict a 3-1 comeback for the Warriors.
And then they lightly booed you, and I threw you under the bus, and I requested louder boos by telling them that you had been louder at the Rice to Ricky Sanchez. You'd been booed louder at the Rice to Ricky Sanchez party in Philly. They did not take very kindly to that. And they kind of went in on you. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, it was a fun little night. And I would be cool whatever happens in this series. I'm no longer rooting for one outcome or another.
Okay, slow down, though. But So they get one, and that honestly, that was a tough one. I mean, that was even tougher than the game two win, which I thought they pulled out of nowhere too, right? I mean, they're just like conjuring these great escapes. Well, so are you still predicting the 3-1 comeback or not?
I'll stick with it just for fun. I'm not wedded to it in any passionate way right now.
Don't sound too excited.
We've been on the road for 14 days straight. I have no more clean laundry. But sure, let's go 7, whatever. Can I read you this text message I sent early in the game about what the Warriors were dealing with?
Please.
I said, this is such a crazy-ass test for the Warriors. Everyone involved has to play great to even have a chance in this environment. And that was before Kevin Durant went down.
Mm.
That was before Kevon Looney went out again with a re-injured clavicle or collarbone or whatever it is that he's dealing with.
Yeah, broken chest is what I call
it. Broken chest is what Kevon Looney is somehow playing through.
Yeah, but not making light of that. I know it sounded like we're joking, but like,
no,
this is where
amazing.
They're at. You know?
It's shocking that he's out there at all. But then when they're relying on Boogie and Bogut to close the game, they had Jordan Bell in there too. Jordan Bell also came up with a couple plays. Like Quinn Cook made a couple shots. But it was, I mean, even when they were up 14, I was watching the Warriors being like, all right, well, you guys are living on borrowed time right now. The Raptors' comeback is coming, and you're eventually screwed.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So if I had told you last night when you're making your prediction that Fred VanVleet would key a 10-0 third quarter run, and then Kawhi Leonard would score 10 straight points in the fourth quarter to put Toronto ahead going into the end game, you're not feeling so hot about your prediction.
No, not at all. And
that's what I mean about any narrative from the story.
Man. Look, like, if the Raptors win this title, we are going to have an extended dialogue about how good Fred VanVleet has been in this series. He honestly, because even in game game four where Kawhi went on that run, the Warriors went up 5 in the middle of that third quarter, and VanVleet buried a 3 to make it a 2-point game. And he's been hitting shots like that the entire series while guarding Steph and staying in his jersey every minute he's on the
and
court.
And talking
trash to KD, which was a very fun moment before everything went to shit tonight.
I mean, Fred VanVleet in his own top 100 is in the top 10. Like, when he ranks himself.
He's fearless, dude. Yeah, no, and if you listen to the Raptors, because I was talking to some of them a couple days ago, like, Danny Green said he's the best sixth man in the world. Pascal Siakam called him his favorite player in the NBA. And VanVleet himself is talking about just the mindset of this team, which is basically, in his words, don't overreact, don't lose your shit. Over time, trust that we're the better team, and that will show out in the end. And that's
where it was going
exactly
until the last 2 minutes. And you get Klay banging a 3, Steph banging a 3, Klay banging another 3, like back to back to back. And that's what I mean about any narrative you want to write. If you want to say, hey, the Raptors all postseason long, they've outlasted their opponents. They've kind of saved their best for second half pushes. Kawhi Leonard steps up. That's how they win. That narrative was looking great until 2 minutes left when, you know, this other narrative of the Splash Brothers are never going to go down without a fight. If they combine for 12 threes, they have a chance to beat anybody, anywhere, at any time and overcome anything and leave even their own coach and teammates kind of speechless with their three-point shooting. And that's the one that won out, but only because they narrowly avoided a disaster from an over-and-back violation with 30 seconds left.
That was really bad. To me,
like, I mean, you can't write it.
Here's the thing, though. I will never forget. Well, the Durant thing is going to color my memories of this night forever.
No, this is the Durant series now forever. I mean,
it is, for better or worse.
No, worse.
Definitely worse. I'm operating on very little sleep right now. Please bear with me. But as far as I'm concerned, the Nick Nurse timeout with 3 minutes left was just as bad as the half-court violation with Draymond and Steph. I just don't know why you take that timeout in that spot. The Raptors were on, I think it was like an 8-0 run, 12-0 run. Like, that was on the heels of those back-breaking Kawhi shots. And Nurse's explanation afterward was that we had an extra timeout and we lose it under 3 minutes. That's not a good reason to take a timeout, especially when you're dealing with a Warriors team that has looked exhausted in the second halves of these games the last couple weeks.
And on top of that, that was like the first real momentum that they had gotten all game. I mean, their offense was rough tonight. I mean, I think they missed their first 16 of their 19 three-pointers as a team. Kawhi had, I thought, his worst game of the finals.
Definitely. I mean, I thought Kawhi looked tired himself for a lot of this game.
Lots of turnovers, lots of missed shots, missed threes. Didn't have that usual command. So maybe that was factoring into it too. It's like, hey, let's just get a breather and hopefully, you know, he'll come back refreshed. But it definitely backfired. I mean, I totally hear your point. But let me ask you, in the end game, and we've had this same question before, was it more about what the Warriors did in terms of stepping up? Or was there the nerves of being on the doorstep of that title from Toronto? Because some of those last couple possessions were pretty bad for them.
Yeah, I mean, Lowry missed a couple open looks. I'd have to go back and look. I know he missed two wide open threes.
Did you see his quote about the last shot? Because, you know, it was like went off the side of the backboard or whatever. And he was like, no, Draymond tipped that. You know, I wouldn't ever shoot it off the side of the backboard. It's like, you wouldn't?
So that was not a great look, okay? That was a relapse into what the Raptors used to be. But I think in general, some of the shots that the Warriors were hitting were just so ridiculous that you kind of have to make this about them.
I hear you.
As much as we can in the shadow of what happened with Durant. Like, the plays that Draymond was making down the stretch. He hit a three. He had a little floater in the lane that was huge as well.
Don't Draymond's feel like threes feel like they're worth 6 points? Like, when he hits them, like, they're so unexpected and,
yeah,
like, the timely a lot of the times. The only other thing that I would kind of nitpick, though, with Toronto's endgame is Klay was really open on one of those threes.
Yes.
And there was a couple situations. I think Lowry mentioned that, like, they combined for 27 three-point attempts, and, like, that was a sign to him that Toronto's perimeter defense wasn't locked in enough because they were able to get so many shots. And I think, in general, Steph and Klay don't really force that many threes, you know? Like, they're all pretty good shots that they take because they you know, they're not like ball hogs or anything.
Well, Steph has been forcing it more in this series because he has to, but you're right.
But he's not like putting him like, he's not going like back foot off the angle. I mean, it's in like tight coverage, you know what I mean? But
yeah, well, this is why I like doing the pod in person sometimes, because you can see me and we can go back and forth much easier. And it's funny because once I said this is about the Warriors, not about the Raptors, in my head I was thinking, you know, they were pretty open on
a
couple of those
looks,
and it's like they only have two shooters on the floor.
Like, I promise I'm not trying to troll you into saying something regrettable that will come back to bite you. I just think, like, there was the same question in game two, right, when their offense falls to pieces in the third quarter, and you're saying, okay, all the stories of, you know, the changed Raptors, you know, Kawhi, you know, spreading his personality off to everybody else. They're all with him. They're all locked in. They're all unflappable. Those questions all kind of like came back in their face. They responded great in game three and game four. But, I mean, they're 2 minutes from a title, right? They're in control. They have all the momentum thanks to Kawhi. They can't get a good shot, and they lose track of Steph and Klay.
The crowd is losing its mind. Don't take a timeout, Nick Nurse, okay? I just, like, he's done a great job in this entire playoff run. He's done a great job in this series in particular. I love starting Van Vliet to start the second half and turn the tide in these third quarters a little bit. Nick Nurse has done a good job, but, God, that one was tough. Because they, like, the crowd was ready to carry these guys to the finish line.
They did their part. There's no doubt about it. A little bit too much after the Durant injury. But let me ask you, though, another big picture question. Golden State has been the team that nobody wanted to win, right? Draymond even said it. Like, they have that famous map, all these different states. Everybody's picking against the Warriors, right?
Yep.
Does Durant's injury, coupled with Steph's heroics, coupled with Klay's heroics, coupled with the Raptors being very, like, 2018 Raptors-y, does that shift, like, the people's favorite? Like, is everyone going to get on board with your 3-1 comeback idea right now?
Well, it may also – look, we have to factor in the Raptors fans cheering aggressively for the first 30 seconds when Durant went down.
That's what I'm saying.
In
so
terms of public opinion.
Right.
I'm willing to forgive. I'm all good. But, like, I think other people – that just left a sour taste in their mouth. And also – look, we've talked about no asterisks. I have loved watching the Raptors put this together. I just got finished talking to a bunch of them, and I'm really impressed by what they've been able to accomplish together. I will say that seeing Durant back out there for a quarter and a half and seeing how much it changes the dynamics on the floor may be tough for people to shake a little bit. It won't undermine the accomplishment in the end, but it does just sort of like change the way we think about this series.
No, I mean, I wrote this before Game 5 that I thought this series will always be known as the Kevin Durant was injured series, right? Because that's just it's so rare that a player...
I wrote that after Game 1.
Yeah.
That no matter what he was going to come back. And like his either return or absence was going to define the series. So we're on the same page.
So, but I guess my point was just that, like, that's not the same as saying it has an asterisk, right? Just because of, like, the historical weight of a player of his magnitude is, you know, that's just going to be remembered as the year. Because if he leaves and the dynasty ends, why did it end? Well, largely because he was hurt, right? Mm-hmm. I think you're right that it underscored and solidified that because now, you know, you're seeing the transformative power, the fact that, like, you know, for 18 minutes, he had them back looking very confident, loose. I mean, even their passing, you know, there's some behind-the-back passes. I mean, they were so emboldened.
Well, and you talk about his sacrifice. The one thing that occurred to me watching him in the first quarter and a half, and even watching the Warriors for the rest of this game, they needed the confidence that he provided them at the start of this game.
That
was a huge deal, and it gave them enough oxygen to keep going in this series, because I think
they were shook in Game 4.
Yeah, and walking off the court, a lot of people around the league were like, all right, so this is the 2014 Heat all over again, and we're going to watch them just run out of gas in Game 5 and get run off the floor. And that didn't happen, and I think Durant's presence is a big reason why they were able to show up and really fight. They're also just a proud team that was going to fight their ass off regardless, but Durant really helped in that regard. And then the other thing that I wanted to say about the Raptors more generally is I'm bummed for the Raptors because they had, like, this playoff run will be legendary and should be legendary. And the ideal ending for them, and I said this at the KOC event as well, is like everyone on Toronto's side should be rooting for Kevin Durant to come back and be healthy, and the Raptors to beat them with Durant on the floor.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating that that isn't going to happen either. And
yeah, and it's gone the other way, like you're saying. But I'd also put it this way. Like, I still kind of feel like Toronto's going to win Game 6. They've had these crazy bounce backs. I've had a really hard time prognosticating this series as it goes game to game, right?
Yeah.
But if they do win Game 6, even without Kevin Durant, I think as time passes, people will say, look, they survived kind of a self-imposed choke job in Game 2. They beat Steph Curry on a career night in Game 3. They sustained a really weird Game 5 where it looked like all of their worst nightmares were coming back to bite them in a situation where Kevin Durant's injury throws the entire game into chaos, and they bounce back again to win it. Especially if they win in 6, I feel like they're going to be able to escape some of the nitpicking that maybe you're predicting.
Yeah.
Maybe not in the short term, but I guess more historically, like,
well,
long term.
No, no, no. And I don't think anybody should be nitpicking any of this, because the reality is it's not like they have been eking out these wins against a wheezing Golden State team. Like, when Toronto has won, Toronto has dominated. And that was even happening in Game 5. When they took over the game, they just looked like a much, much better team. And then they kind of ran out of gas. And that, it's a credit to Golden State. It's like that's why they're champs. If you give them even the slightest bit of room, Clay and Steph are going to find a way to make this work.
Part of the reason why I think that Game 6, though, could go Toronto's way is because everything had to break right for Golden State to, like, pull this out, right?
And that's going to be true in every Warriors game going forward. Like, you're going to need Quinn Cook to hit some shots. You're going to need Boogie to pull perfectly solid game out of
He was really, really good. I mean, so that's the thing. So you've got, you know, Cousins playing well, Draymond playing well, both Steph and Klay shooting well. And then on the other side, you've got Toronto 8-for-32 on threes. So that's unlikely to happen again.
Yeah.
You've got Kawhi with 5 turnovers and only 6 assists. So that's pretty much his worst offensive playmaking type game. He only shot 9-for-24 from the field. Definitely his worst overall offensive game during these finals. So I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of room for those things to kind of balance out. And even if it's ugly, and even if it, you know, even if it's against, you know, a great Oracle crowd, which everybody was predicting, including Kevin Durant for Game 6, You know, I think like that would wind up being kind of a signature way to win it, don't you think? Like just like grinding it out when people think, oh, everything's turned. I mean, that's kind of been their story.
That has been the story of their playoff run, is that everyone looks at them and says, oh, same old Raptors, here we go. And then they come back and win. and they are breaking from tradition. Okay?
Right. And also those minutes from KD were huge, because I think it threw Pascal off. You could just tell the length. Like the first play of the game, he has a turnover, right?
Yeah.
He gets his shot blocked by KD. Those minutes aren't going to be there in game six, right? So you're back to the same motley crew of guys who were struggling in games three and four to kind of get that done. So I don't know.
Can I tell you what really bums me out, though?
Yep.
Is that... And this is why, and this is where we're going to end. We're going to keep it tight tonight. It's late. I have to fly very early in the morning. You have to write for the rest of the night.
We have to go mourn.
Yes, we have to continue mourning. But what really bums me out is that I agree with everything we're saying about the Raptors and what this means and the credit that they deserve. I do think that the Durant injury and the way it happened is so dramatic and mind-boggling that is going to overshadow anything that happens on the court for the rest of this series. And maybe the Warriors will come back from down 3-1 to win the series, and Game 7 will kind of bring us back to the court. And that will be true for however long Game 7 lasts. But I do think, like, this is just such a league-altering development that it's just going to be hard to focus on whatever happens out there.
I mean, do you think the other superstars were, like, texting AD and saying, hey, look, like, the plans with KD fell through this summer?
Yeah, maybe. Like, no lie, and we don't need to go down that rabbit hole.
No, I think we should call on the NSA. We need some text message transcripts from these superstar players in terms of how they're reacting to that in real time, because, I mean, it's sort of like when LeBron used to put everything on hold with his decision, like, nobody else would get to sign until LeBron signed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everything is so intertwined here with this summer. I mean, we're seeing rumors this week of, Kawhi and KD teaming up, Anthony Davis and KD teaming up, Kyrie and KD teaming up. Like,
yeah, well, and we saw rumors with KD going to LA maybe.
Like, LeBron and KD.
Yeah, it's been all over the map, and all of that was part of the subtext with him coming back in the finals. And, I think at the end of the day, a lot of people – are just going to say, like, I've never seen anything crazier than that involving an all-time great athlete.
You remember, like, the cramps game? That was crazy. This was 10 times crazier. Yeah. And I was at the cramps game, like, waiting in the locker room, having people, like, drip sweat on me, like, hoping LeBron would come out. He never came out. I always thought that was going to be my go-to vignette for, like, the craziest, like high stakes NBA basketball moment that I'd witnessed.
Yeah.
This just blows it out of the water. So I think you're right here saying,
and the reality is, just to kind of underscore what I'm saying, that game we just watched was one of the greatest playoff games I've ever seen.
Right.
Given the stage, given the stakes, and given the performances on both sides. Because Kawhi in the middle of that fourth quarter was out of his mind.
Yeah, it wasn't the prettiest, but it was like tense and back and forth, and
you had like great players coming up huge,
right?
And yet I was sitting there being like, this just is harder to enjoy because of the Durant stuff. And
right.
Then
and you see a bunch of reporters go away from the game to go stake out the hallway to see him just walk by with crutches, right? Because in that moment they realize, okay, that's kind of the story here, right? So to underscore what you're saying though here, I think we should just clarify. This is the Kevin Durant injury series. There's no question about it. If Golden State wins, it's one of the most legendary. I mean, that might even top Cleveland's 3-1 comeback.
Yeah.
Given these stakes. So that's crazy, because we never thought that would be possible.
It wouldn't top Cleveland's 3-1 comeback.
Really?
It would be in the – I mean, I think they're on similar levels. I don't
just
know
because
the
quality of competition is
like the Warriors were great, and LeBron accomplishing that in that moment – It's tough to top that.
I don't know. I'm saying if Steph pulls a 3-1 comeback with no KD after he goes out in this game,
it'll be in the mix. I'm just not ready to say it would top anything.
It might not top it, but it's in this kind of like hallowed conversation, right? And yeah. I think if Toronto wins, though, this is what we kind of need to like drill down. You're not saying that because KD overshadows it that winds up being an asterisk. You're not saying that.
No.
Okay. because I think that's the murky area that a lot of people are going to be playing in, I think, over the next 48 hours.
What happened with KD is so crazy that it's hard to focus on whatever is going to happen with the Warriors and the Raptors over the next couple days.
But I also think that once this series is done, once the dust settles, if Toronto wins, I believe they will get their due regardless.
Yeah, from both of us, certainly. And we've been haters from the beginning.
That's all that matters. We set the agenda for the world.
Yes, both you and I have been taken aback by how impressive the Raptors have been at various points over the last month or two.
Yeah, so here's the deal, Open Floor Globe. I think we've reached a resolution, but we need you guys to weigh in. So email openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. We're going to try to pick up our consciences and everything else over the next 24 hours as we fly back to the Bay Area. But let us know your instant Game 5 reactions, what you think the implications of Kevin Durant's injury are going to be, whether you think Toronto will get its credit, where Golden State's comeback would rank, all these kinds of things that we're batting around. We want to hear from you.
And I also promise that the next podcast, I am not going to be recording catatonic and like horribly depressed because of the Durant injury. So we will start to open it up around the league. And yes, we can talk about the implications of the KD injury. And look, hopefully we are going to be able to look back on this podcast and call it completely ridiculous and melodramatic because maybe he only has a partial Achilles tear. Maybe he's back in a couple months. We'll see. But Bob Myers' reaction is part of why it's hard to be super optimistic. But either way, get well soon, Kevin Durant, and we're going to be back later in the week.
Absolutely. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. Find our page, scroll down. It'll say rate and review, tap 5 stars, throw us the bone for recording this at 1:30 a.m. as Sharp's about to fall asleep. I'm also on Instagram at ben.golliver. Andrew, we posted a bunch of photos from that live podcast that you mentioned earlier for Kevin O'Connor. It was pretty awesome. People need to be following if they want that juicy content. Also, we're on the world famous radio.com/openfloor. All right, Open Floor Globe, we're calling on you to pick us up for our next podcast, so we want to hear from you. Okay, Andrew, until later this week, broadcasting live from the Suite Life in Oracle Arena, I'll talk to you.
There we go. The last game at Oracle. Talk to you soon, man.